The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this special free agent edition of A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined as always by Mr. Denny Carter. Denny, I don't know if you're familiar with the markets, hashtag the markets, but they are raging right now. We got quarterback signing. We got running back signing. We got wide receiver signing. We have late breaking news, Denny. We have a kicker signing.
We do.
It's a five-year deal for Younghoe Koo, the true GOAT kicker. I mean, we like to make kicker jokes, but we were talking about in the Slack before the show went live, like, Younghoe Koo, like, is actually, like, ridiculously legendarily good. I didn't know he's 13 of 14 on field goals beyond 50 yards. How is that even possible?
Yeah, and he was never known as a guy with, like, a huge foot coming into the league. This guy went from borderline out of the league. He was a hair.
What happens when you're on the Chargers? I mean, it's fine.
Out of the league, right. Just a disaster, missing short field goals, missing extra points for the Chargers. And now he's the second highest paid kicker in the NFL. You got to feel good for him.
And by the Chargers, by the way, I mean, this time it counts. There's no way it's going to fail this time for the Chargers. I've already made that joke on Twitter, so I'm sorry if you follow me on Twitter. But
I'm sorry. I follow you on Twitter.
Hey, yeah, you know, it's usually the other way around. Truly no way it fails this time for the Chargers. Before I get any deeper in the show, by the way, I need to mention – we're having a special show. I mean, you're probably listening to this taped. I don't know what time you're listening to this. We have a special show Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern. That will also be available in podcast form, but we are streaming live tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitch, just with further free agency breakdown. Going to be myself, Denny Carter, Patrick Crane, and Kyle Dvorak. So please join us tomorrow night when we're going to have a gaggle of more signings than we already have. And yeah, by the way, sorry, this show – by the time you're listening to the show, I mean, it's like the whole league will be on different teams. Like I don't know why I'm listening to this podcast when, you know, Patrick Mahomes is on the Falcons now. But I guess I'll still listen just because I like to listen to Denny and Pat. Right. Yeah, we're going to break down the first day and a half. By the way, Thomas Brady, you ever heard of him?
I remember him.
Sunday night. I don't know. We need to talk about this. I mean, yeah. he's back.
Well, we need to talk about what exactly transpired to make him give up retirement after 40 days. my best guess as a married dad living the dad life is that he had to fold laundry once,
or he had to come up with a game once,
and that and that was it. That was ball game. He was like, "Oh my God, wait, what? This is what we do. This is what you do as a family."
No, Brady is like such an obsessive person that he's probably like amazing at folding laundry. It's probably like once like Giselle's probably like, you need to come up with like a single craft to do with the children. And he's just like gets on the phone, like, what's Gronk's number again? Like,
yeah, oh, right.
My daughter comes up to me. He's like, Dad, can we do crafts? And then that's why I joined the NFL, because my 5-year-old daughter needed me to come up with like a craft idea. I don't mind doing the crafts. That's a really underrated part of being a parent. It's like how many ideas you're supposed to have. I'm like, I don't know. All I've ever done is sit on the couch my whole life. I don't know how to play games.
Let me be a layabout.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a layabout, kids. And then they just punch you in the spleen.
You're right.
And then you have to come up with the game.
And demand games. And maybe that's what happened with Brady. Maybe he had to come up with exactly one game. And he said, Bruce, are you good? Can are we back for next year? And Bruce said, hell yes, please come back.
And Bruce knew the score. I mean, he knew this was going to happen.
I did like Jensen, the offensive lineman for Tampa who resigned.
The center.
Right. He in an interview today said Brady coming back had nothing to do with it.
I thought there was going to be a punchline there. No, that is the punchline, obviously.
That's it. So I'm looking forward to Leonard Fournette resigning and being like, Brady's back. I didn't know that. I love the Bucs as a team.
I mean, frankly, they were looking forward to playing with Blaine Gabbert.
Right. They were a bottom five team without Brady, and they're a top three team with him. So, but that makes no difference.
Yeah, it makes no difference. By the way, Blaine Gabbert, by the way, was a good luck charm at the SEC basketball tournament. He attended a Mizzou victory, and we won. And a day later, he attended again, and we lost. But he was still Mizzou, exactly. Great. No, I think my favorite joke on the Brady Colts beat writer named George Brimmer, I believe is how you pronounce his name. I was raised Catholic, so I'm partial to Catholic humor. He said, "Tom Brady didn't retire; he gave up football for Lent." It was exactly 40 days. It's pretty good.
Yeah, there is a little biblical edge to this whole thing. 40 day deal.
Yeah, there's a biblical edge to everything with Tom Brady. I feel like smoldering right beneath the surface, even though he's not one of those guys. Like after a game, Brady's not thanking God. He's thanking himself usually, like in his head, like in his like corporate way.
Yeah.
But
I want to thank Nike for.
Yeah, there's always like some. There's definitely like world civilizations colliding inside Tom Brady. And even if he doesn't know it, he's probably a very biblical person.
He is a hashtag great man.
Yeah, check out the great man theory, folks, if you don't know about it. Brady ascribes to the great man theory. There's nothing actually to say about the Brady thing, right? I mean, probably could have won MVP last year. Bucks still good.
I am a little bit surprised that he's coming back to Tampa because, I mean, I guess he had no choice, right? I mean, if he was going to come back,
he did. And which I think was kind of the hang up there where. So, like, getting more serious with the Brady talk, he signed a 2-year deal. Then he added, like, a cap dummy year for year three.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like everyone's understanding at the time it was, like, a dummy year. Like, it wasn't, like, a legit extension. But now the Bucks, unsurprisingly, were treating it like a real year. And I think that's where, like, the animosity, if there was any, acrimony came from, that he at least wanted to, like, be a free agent again, I think, maybe. I have no idea if he actually wanted to leave the Bucks, obviously. But it seemed like maybe that kind of rubbed him the wrong way that this dummy cap year was being treated as a real year by the Bucks after the fact. But I don't know. Maybe it wasn't a dummy year. Maybe that was like a misconception by the media. But it did seem like that was like where the one true difference between the Bucks and Tom Brady was like over what this contract like actually meant. And, you know, I hate to admit it, but I mean, Tom Brady probably did earn the right. So he should have been able, if he wanted to play somewhere different this year, I feel like to choose that. And the Bucks were not going to give that to him.
I am enjoying the discourse around the Bucks. The Bucks don't even have a running back. How are they gonna do what they've done the last 2 years? Come on. Literally anybody can slot into that backfield and be great.
Well, Denny, it's funny you mentioned the slot, and it's funny you mentioned anyone on the Bucks. We have late breaking news, Bucks news, where Russell Gage, one of the most important players in PPR football, has apparently signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
All right, and okay.
I mean, Denny, you were bragging about prep you had done for the show before the show. I mean, you haven't prepped this at all since it just happened. But, I mean, Russell Gage, what is he now? PPR, I mean, the level of scam that Russell Gage is versus the level of scam that PPR is versus the level of scam Tom Brady is, we're probably looking at like a top 30 receiver here, right?
Wait, no, but, I mean, I guess he's Godwin insurance?
I think sorry to this layer on the sorry. I think he probably will just be Godwin insurance.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the contract terms are. I mean, he's not someone you could afford just as like a throw-in to your roster.
Right. That's surprising. I mean, unless they really just wanted to step on the Falcons for a final time. I don't understand.
I guess also, too, though, like, so they have two superstars in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. One of them's injured, like you said. Maybe this is like an admission not an admission. I mean, the depth actually ended up not being that great for the Bucs receiver core, which is really weird to say when you had three superstars beginning the year on the roster. But like kind of I used to like say like the Bucs second team could be almost as good as some team's first team. That ended up not being true, really, with Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson just were not up to the task. And yeah, Gage is probably just, yeah, he's insurance on Godwin, but also maybe just more necessary than we realized with the Bucs receiver core. And it's very top heavy and very like no injuries, like you're set basically, but that's not really how the NFL works. And
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Gage did play some on the outside the last couple of years. So, you know, maybe they could use him in that way, you know, across the formation from Evans with Godwin in the slot when Godwin is back fully healthy. I mean, from a real football standpoint, it seems like a really good addition. From a fantasy standpoint, I think Gage could be fun while it, or if Godwin misses a game or two or three to start the year. I also think that Gage could be very much overdrafted if it's clear, if the Bucs say we're not going to have Chris Godwin for September, say, then I think that fantasy managers could might get a little too excited about Russell Gage.
He probably overall takes a fantasy hit, or because like it's weird, like the ceiling, like his highest highs will probably be higher than they were in Atlanta, but he's going to have more like lower lows probably. Or if this offense is healthy, yeah, he's not going to be getting 9 or 10 targets ever. The spiked week potential, like he could have some like truly massive spiked weeks, I guess, especially while Chris Godwin's out, where he could have like 10 or 11 catches or something like that. Like the second Godwin's back in the fold, yeah, you're probably pulling the ripcord.
So what you're saying, is Russell Gage and best ball.
Of course. Yes, of course. Obviously. So yeah, there's our first unplanned signing of the show. Denny, you quote tweeted an official NFL tweet saying the Steelers, quote unquote, got their quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky. Your quote tweet was, "Did they though?" And so don't tweets, even good tweets sound so dumb.
They do.
When you read them out loud.
Yes, they absolutely
do. I could have a tweet that's like the greatest tweet I've ever had. If you read it back to me, I'd just be like, "Oh, I'm going to go crawl in a hole and die."
Well, I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I'm just so stupid. But so yeah, I mean, I think that is the prevailing sentiment though. I mean, I agree with your questioning. This can't be all there is a quarterback for the Steelers, right? And Mitchell Trubisky, and who is his one 2021 accomplishment was not playing. That was his real accomplishment. Was not playing.
And he did the right thing.
Yeah, he did the right thing. It is true. It's what he needed to do. Was not play and show people his full Trubiskiness. And I think the only way he could have really taken a step forward was if he had remained in the same system with Brian Daboll and like continued to grow and learn.
Yeah.
With Brian Daboll. But like, I don't know. I don't really see any upside in this for the Steelers. Yeah. And I don't see anything standing between them and taking a quarterback at number 20 or trading up and selecting a quarterback, you know, the top 10, 15.
Yeah, I mean, they have him, Haskins, Mason Rudolph, who the team talks
just, or they like him
in unbelievably positively about. Like, who are you fooling? Like, who are you trying to convince on Mason Rudolph? Fans love Mason Rudolph. It's very weird. But Trubisky is not going to start, you know, throughout the season. Like, he's probably going to start the season.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I thought you were saying he wasn't going to start at all. I was like, let me stop you there.
No, he would have to really, really be bad or hurt in order not to start the season under center for Pittsburgh. You know, Mike Tomlin has talked about wanting a mobile quarterback. Well, I mean, Trubisky is technically a mobile quarterback. You know, he did
emphasis
have
emphasis on technically.
So, well, he had some rushing success with the Bears. In fact, it was when I don't know who made the call, whether it was Matt Nagy or Trubisky himself, when he stopped running is when the Bears offense really bogged down and became unwatchable and you know, stopped scoring points, stopped gaining yards. Like Trubisky taking off after one read was actually way better than Trubisky trying to sit back there and read defenses, because he didn't and he couldn't.
No, and it was because it actually coincided, I believe, with a shoulder injury.
Yes.
So hopefully he's healed up, because again, he literally didn't play last year. So hopefully the shoulder is good. But a lot of times when that happens, when these like kind of dual threats, because obviously he's a really good athlete compared to the average human. I'm sure he's an amazing runner. But like for like a dual threat, he's still like not like a dual threat. He's not even like he's not even like a Marcus Mariota level.
No,
a dual threat. Or it's like something he can do in an emergency. But like those kind of guys. Yeah, if they get like one knock, so you talk about Tom Brady like having to do something once, like kind of like these fake dual threats, if they get injured once, they kind of stop running. And that did happen with Mitchell Trubisky. But I agree. Like, if he's going to have any fantasy success, or even any real life success,
yeah,
in his time as the Steelers bridge quarterback, that element of his game really does need to come back.
I mean, if you know, looking at his career stats in 2018 for the Bears, which was his best fantasy season, statistical season, he had 68 rushing attempts for 421 yards and three touchdowns. So, you know, that's not nothing, I will say. If he gets back to something like that, he could be useful. My guess would be the Steelers want him to do as little as possible, and they want to probably lean on Najee Harris, unlike any team wants to lean on their running back outside of Derrick Henry with the Titans. I think that will be the game plan. I am surprised that Mariota, who's better, every measure is better than Trubisky. I'm surprised Mariota didn't land in Pittsburgh. It's a curious choice.
I mean, we were part of that drumbeat trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Or it would have been Trubisky too. See, like Mike Tomlin, we kept harping on that quote about Mike Tomlin, like wanting, what was it? Did he say more athletic, more mobile? What was
the
word?
Yeah, more mobile. And he said we were limited. We, you know, Matt Canada, our offense coordinator, could only call so many plays because of our quarterback.
And like, he might've been thinking back to the days, like, I'm going to make like a legit Zoomers comment. It's probably hard for Zoomers to remember. Like at one point, Ben Roethlisberger was never a dual threat. Like, yeah. Mobile would be a strong word to use for him, but like, he was a mobile pocket mover,
uh-huh,
and like, dudes like bounced off of him. I just kind of hope they're not expecting that with Mitchell Trubisky, because like, Ben Roethlisberger was like truly elite in the pocket and in pocket movement at one stage of his career. Mitchell Trubisky is not, and he's also 3 or 4 inches shorter than Ben Roethlisberger, not nearly as big as Ben Roethlisberger was. And so, yeah, I just hope they're not trying. They need to run a totally different system if it's Mitchell Trubisky, basically what I'm saying. One that both hides him and also tries to use his athleticism and maybe it kind of ruins everyone for fantasy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Deontay Johnson getting 14 targets a game, that's probably over.
That's probably canceled.
Yeah.
And I mean, who else is on the Steelers? I don't know. It's been a long time since the season ended. And they got some other good players,
Claypool,
right?
I believe. Chase Claypool is on the Steelers.
I'm looking it up. Yeah, I knew it was 2 C's. Juju Smith-Schuster will not still be on the Steelers. We don't know where he's signing, and he could just like default back into Steelers mode. He's a company man,
you know. He really is. They should build a statue to Juju just for his loyalty to the city of Pittsburgh. Okay, I'm looking at some Trubisky numbers from 2018, which I'm cherry picking here because 2018 was an exceptionally good year for him. But here's some box scores from that year. As far as rushing goes, 6 for 81 on the ground, 4 for 53, 6 for 51, 8 for 47. So he had 10 rushes in one game for 40 yards. There's some appeal there. I don't know if the Steelers are going to be into using him as a rusher, but that would be the only positive case you can make for him from a fantasy standpoint.
If there's one thing I know about 2018, it's that nothing has happened since then. Anywhere in football or the world.
Or the world.
So I think it's good. Yeah, I think it's good to talk about Mitchell Trubisky's stats from 2018. It's true. And that's clearly the plan. I mean, they talked about that wanting to be the plan where they just can't deal. It's weird. It's like Mitchell Trubisky, I was going to have the take that everyone's talking about how awful the Steelers offensive line is. Like I was going to have the take, Mitch might make them look better because he's at least mobile and kind of move around. But also Mitch was, I feel like, the kind of guy who makes offensive lines look bad because he just is a poor decision maker.
Yes, a lot of forced sacks.
I don't think he's going to solve reputational problem for the Steelers offensive line. So Mitchell Trubisky. So I mean, we just talked a lot about Mitchell Trubisky. Do we even really say anything? Like, are we drafting him in best ball leagues or anything like that?
No, absolutely not. No.
Okay, good. Because we're just waiting for Malik Willis to the Steelers, right? That's really kind of what I'm still waiting
that
on.
That would be pretty sweet, I think. I think that'd be good.
It would be good. It would be really good. And I feel like the world has been building towards that. Sometimes like the government tries to like prepare people for the reveal of the existence of aliens. I kind of think maybe that's
what the Steelers. Yeah, I am fully aware of that phenomenon, yes.
I think that's maybe what the Steelers have been trying to do with people in Malik Willis. Basing this on like 2 tweets that I don't remember who they're from or what the quotes were, but that's just something I'm trying to will into existence.
I'm with you. I mean, I'm on the Willis train. I would like for him to go somewhere where they're not going to be like, he's going to sit all year. It doesn't matter. And I feel like Mike Tomlin is the kind of coach who would be like, Malik Willis will not see one single second of playing time this season as long as I'm head coach.
Just say maybe until 2024.
That's absolutely not out of the realm of possibilities.
So anyway, yeah, we just talked a lot about Mitchell Trubisky, and I feel like we didn't really tell the folks much about it, but we just like to talk about him. Is what it is. That's and right. We actually did. We said a lot of we said some good stuff there. Now we're gonna have some good stuff to say about Chase Edmonds, Denny, who this is probably the most interesting signing of free agency so far. 2-year, $12.6 million contract with the Miami Dolphins. He's landing with a guy in Mike McDaniel from a coaching tree that is famous for the how you know fantasy viable, fantasy profitable makes running backs. Also famous for sprawling committees. And probably safe to assume the 49ers are not done reshaping their backfield, but also safe to assume he's going to remain a part of a committee. Well, of course, because I just said that and I just basically repeated that in different words, but he's always been in a committee, but he's always been like the 1B in a committee. Is it safe to assume he'll at least be the 1A in whatever this Dolphins committee ends up? Can we say that about Chase Edmonds, or do we not even have that much confidence yet?
In 57 games in the NFL, Chase Edmonds has 8 double-digit carry games. So I don't know if we're going to get
– really know, that bleak? Move on to the next stat.
He just really, really doesn't shape up as a guy who's, like, guaranteed 15 carries a game. And if they are, I don't know if he's, like, built for that or he has struggled through a lot of injuries. Some of them – you know, not so serious. I mean, I don't mean to downplay it, but you know, a lot of nicks and bruises, let's put it that way, in Arizona. I think, you know, PPR wise, he could be really interesting if they adopt a system where there's a lot of dump offs and a lot of screens to the running backs. He would be obviously the primary pass catching back in the Miami backfield if they were to do that. And you know, Tua's game, if Tua is indeed the starting quarterback for the Dolphins, this season, Tua's game is good for that. You know, he's not a downfield throw. He's not aggressive downfield. He's not good downfield. Maybe a lot of check down type stuff like Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco is what we'll see. And that would benefit Edmonds from a PPR standpoint. He does strike me as a guy who, could be overdrafted, you know, by in the dead zone, in the running back dead zone by fantasy managers who are getting a little nervous about their wide receiver heavy start or whatever. And they go, I gotta grab Edmonds here. I gotta get him. That to me doesn't seem like the best strategy in 2022.
He does kind of, he seems like a career Duke Johnson kind of, doesn't he? And I feel like he doesn't need to be that, but just as like a classic, he was typecast very early in his career that he's like a pure change up. Breather back is strong. Breather back means you only come in when the other guy's tired. He's not a breather back, but his absolute ceiling is being a 1A in a committee. And like you said, it's not even guaranteed. How many times did he have double-digit carries?
8. He has 8 in 57 games. Now, I will say that the one time that he was fed like a true workhorse, which was week 7 in 2019, we all remember that week.
Boy, everyone knows that.
He had 27 rushing attempts for 126 yards and 3 touchdowns. So, you know, he has that going for him.
He does have that going for him. Off the top of your head, without like looking at a ranking sheet, just like what feels right, RB what for Chase Edmonds? Again, and overall, I think like the overall range, not 1, 2, or 3. It's like what range of the board do you slot him in at? Just like what feels instinctually right?
25 to 35.
Okay. My placeholder rank for him was RB 36. Like that was pure placeholders before he signed.
I guess I'm higher than you
are. That needs to be updated, obviously. But no, now like, would you rather have Chase Edmonds or Michael Carter in 2022?
Carter.
Do you rather have Chase Edmonds or Travis Etienne?
Oof. Man, assuming full health, I actually would go with Etienne.
Would you rather have Chase Edmonds or Tony Pollard?
Edmonds.
Okay. I don't know. Chase Edmonds or we'll do Josh Jacobs.
Oh, man. I'm weirdly a Jacobs guy. I'll go with Jacobs.
All right. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, it's not a silver bullet. It's a pretty good landing spot, all things considered. I don't think Chase Edmonds was ever going to get like a 3-down roll, obviously. He at least landed with, in theory, a good coach. I mean, Mike McDaniel's like never even called plays. We don't really know. We know who he worked for, and we know his reputation. Yeah. His reputation is very, very, very strong. is considered basically one of the smartest assistants in the NFL, but we just don't quite know what he's going to do yet. But in terms of opportunity and the coach he could have landed with, it was probably about as good of a landing spot, I feel like, as Chase Edmonds could have had. But you're just right to caution and remind people, yeah, he's never been used in a way that's going to like send his fantasy value like much higher than it already was.
Yeah, so, and also, you know, critically, he's not used for the most valuable touches a running back can get, which is are touches inside the 10-yard line. He did not get those in Arizona, and I think that was for a reason.
Yeah, and there's quite literally no way a guy from the Kyle Shanahan tree is like not going to have some like weird like goal line specialist. Like,
yeah.
There's just absolutely like no way that Mike McDaniel's not going to overthink that one. And so I see very little like chance that Chase Edmonds is going to be the goal line back in Miami. So that's the end of the show today. The Jaguars didn't sign anybody. They didn't sign every tier B free agent in the entire NFL, Denny.
Did you read that the agents and teams were furious about Christian Kirk's contract?
I mean, they should be.
They actually like all negotiations with wide receivers froze after that because Trent Baalke, went on a spending frenzy and gave Christian Kirk probably like 3 to 5 million more than any other team would have. And teams and agents were like, wait, what? What's going on here? My guy deserves more than this. I mean, the agents would say that.
I mean, Christian Kirk is now making $18 million a year. So it's a 4-year, $72 million deal for Christian Kirk. I'd say even more controversially, it's a 3-year, $24 million deal for Zay Jones.
Yeah.
And a 1-year, $9 million deal for Evan Engram as the Jaguars begin like the wholesale remaking of their receiver core. So we'll get into it player by player, but like, first off, I mean, is this receiver core, is this even like that much better? Like, if they really even move the needle, or because like they subtracted DJ Shark, like, is this even really that much better of a group right now? Or like, are we under Christian Kirk's weird? He can work on the outside, he can work on the slot, he's actually very versatile, but he's like weirdly never even really came close to achieving his theoretical ceiling in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't
know. It's probably better. It's probably a little bit better. Yeah. I feel like a little bit on an island and saying that Evan Engram is probably a really good signing for them. Playing for a coach, you talked about this before the show, a coach who has used the tight end as a seam buster. And
Peterson and Zach Ertz, folks.
And look, it's been a long time since we've seen Evan Engram used the way that he should probably be used on an NFL offense. And that is as a downfield type pass catcher, possibly a big play guy. Instead, Jason Garrett and Joe Judge treated him like Jason Witten. And it was very frustrating for, I'm sure, for him, for fantasy managers, for people touting him. I mean, it was tough action in New York. I blame the system and the coaches more than Engram himself. And by the way, Trevor Lawrence targeted tight ends on 20% of his throws last year. So he does like the tight end.
Yeah, I was going to say, so it's working on two fronts for Evan Engram, where he has a coach who has a history of featuring the seam, and then a quarterback, I mean, kind of out of survival. But Trevor Lawrence targeted the seam a lot as a rookie. I mean, our boy Dan Arnold, how could we forget? James O'Shaughnessy, indelible fan. I mean, future Hall of Famers. And the streaming Hall of Fame, of course.
Yeah, we're having a special James O'Shaughnessy podcast on St. Patrick's Day.
Of course, yes. Of course we are. Two people, the last names Darty and Carter, will be hosting that. So, like, Evan Engram, too. Like, you hit it there. Like, he's being used like Jason. He needs to be used like Mike Gesicki. Like, the guy is like a receiver, basically.
Yes, yes.
I can't remember if he's supposed to be a blocker, good blocker. I don't think he's ever had a particularly great blocking reputation.
Thank God he's not. Thank God he's not a good blocker.
No, and I will say with Evan Engram, he's kind of like early career Jared Cook-like. Where I feel like he's put big plays on film. He gets open for big plays, but he's like very mistake-prone. Like, he's like the classic guy where like Fox's Kevin Burkhardt was like, the hit off Evan Engram's helmet. Like, that was, I don't know what he was looking at. He's running wide open over the middle of the field. And for some reason, the ball just hit right off his helmet.
Oh, yeah. No, every 40-yard reception for Evan Engram ends with a fumble.
Exactly. So, do you think Evan Engram is more likely to be a tight end one in 2022 or out of the league in 2024? What is more likely?
Wow. Wow. I'll go with the former. I'll go with a 10-1. And that's not really saying much. I mean,
no.
a bottom half, or you know, a tight end 10 to 12 is basically unusable as an every week option. You know, there are only 3 to 4, maybe 5 tight ends who are locked in starters throughout the season, and he won't be one of them, but I think he could still be useful.
I wish Evan Engram were younger. Like, I knew he'd already been in the league 5 years, but I was kind of assuming he'd be like 26 or 27. He's going to turn 28 in September. So I'm not sure how much untapped potential is really there for Evan Engram. But yeah, it's not like the target competition is that fierce. So let's get into that. I mean, Christian Kirk, he's now the unquestioned number one. I mean, Marvin Jones is still there, but what is the summer narrative going to be on Christian Kirk? Is it going to be lol, Jaguars, like this is such a horrible signing? It's like that'll affect like his ADP in fantasy, or will there be like a rally around the ADP effect? Like his ADP is too low for a while, so he kind of becomes like a cause célèbre. I have no idea how to pronounce that.
No one does.
He's like a fantasy hero because he's like a value all summer. Like what's the narrative going
to
be?
I think there will be a decent argument to be had if his ADP drops too low. I think there will be a decent argument to say, look, I don't even like Christian Kirk as a player. I don't like the Jacksonville offense. I don't like Trevor Lawrence, but we're drafting Christian Kirk below guys who are going to see 40 fewer targets than him. You know, if that's the case, then I could buy into that a little bit. I don't think that that'll happen, especially in savvier leagues. I don't see him falling that far at all, you know, that far off of ADP or what his ADP should be. Honestly, we're forgetting that Jamal Agnew is probably still the wide receiver in the Jaguars offense. That guy was very impressive in his very short stint as the top pass catching option in the Jags offense. But one more thing about the Jags, and I tweeted this the other day, and I think I need to write on it. Trevor Lawrence's peripheral numbers, forget the raw stuff or raw stats from his rookie year, his peripheral numbers were frightening.
They were bad.
I mean, nightmarish stuff. Like Zach Wilson was better in almost every way, and Zach Wilson was unbearably bad. Okay. So I feel like Trevor Lawrence, we have to, as fantasy managers and probably as NFL fans and Jags fans, we probably have to shift our expectation of Trevor Lawrence from this the Megatron of quarterbacks to like a serviceable game manager. I think that's probably
his upside. It's so tough because, like you said, the raw stats were bad. The peripherals were just as bad. But it was just like, I think I feel comfortable calling it like an unprecedented situation.
Yeah.
Where he just did not, he had an unserious head coach. And like so a point we've made many times on the podcast, being like, for a rookie quarterback at the end of the season, having to be explaining the actions of his head coach rather than vice versa. I mean, you want the coach explaining like why the rookie quarterback was out drinking or whatever, or why he threw 4 picks. We had the rookie quarterback almost the entire final half of the season, like answering quite like, yeah, I don't know why coach was tabletop dancing in an Athens, Georgia bar. As far as I know, he doesn't even have any connections to Georgia. Like it was just an unprecedented situation with a very unserious man leading the team. And I just feel like, I mean, I know like it can be like excuse making, but like you can almost just like throw out all of 2021 for Trevor. I mean, I'm probably getting too deep into excuse making, but I just have a hard time drawing any real conclusions because he was just in a situation that like no NFL football player should ever be in, having like answer for the coach. And very bizarre.
Year two, and I'm sure you would agree, year two for Lawrence will be very important.
Very, very important. And Doug Peterson was a guy who, I mean, Carson Wentz in his year two was going to win the MVP under Doug Peterson. Like, that is the most insane thing. Carson Wentz was literally going to be the 2017 MVP of the NFL.
He was
until
good.
He tore his ACL. And now he's on the Commanders, a team that exists.
A team that couldn't get any other quarterback to come play for them.
No, yeah.
He was it.
Yeah, imagine, like, again, like this is always a kind of ridiculous exercise, but I tell you, in December 2017, Carson Wentz in 5 years from now is going to be on his second team since the Eagles, and they're called the Commanders.
that sounds like a made-up tweet.
So, it's a big, big year for Mr. Trevor Lawrence. But, I think we can't really be too harsh about that rookie year. I mean, the rest of these Jags, I mean, Zay Jones, I mean, I don't even know what to say about Zay Jones.
That's unreal.
It sucks for Zay Jones because, like, now he's going to be, like, the new avatar of a bad contract. Like, he's like, I didn't do anything. Like, all I did was sign a check.
He popped a little bit after Henry Ruggs was kicked off the Raiders, and good for him. I mean, he cashed in a huge way, in a way that seemed impossible headed into last season. You know, he was the Bills tried to make him a thing for years, and it just wasn't happening. Comes to the Raiders. The Raiders loved him from a cultural standpoint. They loved his leadership and everything.
He's marrying every person's daughter on that whole team, basically. Yeah. He's like, which is the weirdest football cliche out there. I'd let this man marry my daughter, but
it's deeply,
they're like vying, Raiders players and coaches vying to let Zay Jones marry their daughter.
Deeply uncomfortable comment, I think, from coaches for them. That's how the measure of a man is, whether you want to marry your daughter off to him.
I feel like that's up to her, but.
many are saying it should be. Zay Jones, it's a disaster. Disastrous contract. He's not going to live up to it. People are going to say, oh, you know, Jags fans are going to be mad at Zay Jones when they should be mad at the management. It's a joke franchise. The Jags are a joke franchise, even with Peterson aboard. Just an absolute disaster of a franchise.
The Jacksonville Jaguars have won more than six games one time since 2010.
I mean, you talk about unserious.
Yeah.
You know, the Jaguars as a team are are the most unserious franchise in professional sports in America.
Yeah, it's a test. So best of luck, Doug. Best of luck.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody can do it, I think it is Doug Peterson. If anybody can get them to some respectability, I think that he can do it. Do I think it's likely? No, I think that he probably gets frustrated at some point and says, "No, I'm not. I'm doing something else. I'm going to go coordinate another team rather than coach this dumb team."
Yeah, I mean, final thought too. I mean, we're giving up the ghost on Visca, right? I mean,
now the rumor is from ESPN is that he's might be traded
on the block.
And you know, look, from a real football standpoint, I actually think that Chenault could be a really nice, interesting addition. If he goes to a team with established pass catchers with a decent offense, I don't even know who I'm thinking of, but maybe, you know, we always say the Chiefs. You know, maybe if he goes there, he could be a gadget type player. He's more of a fantasy football folk hero at this point than an actual, like, legitimate receiver, but, you know, they could work.
Yeah, I mean, just through 2 years, he probably needed to, like, show more actual receiving tricks and prowess, and he just looks like full-blown gadget player, which is fine. I mean, he looks like, basically, if someone wants to get serious on making the Cordarrelle Patterson role a thing, like, he would be elite at that. But basically not going to happen as, like, a traditional straight-ahead wide receiver. Right. The teams need to get more creative with his usage. And, yeah, Urban Meyer – like, didn't even want him. He, like, tried to replace him, like, three times. So he was, like, not serious about making LaVisca Chenault a thing.
Had no interest. I mean, and obviously, Peterson is like Meyer. He had no interest in trying to make Chenault a legit starting receiver.
Yeah, my actual true parting thought is that Doug Peterson, yeah, whatever happened to those Eagles receivers? I don't think there's ever been an Eagles – I think I had a stat the other day. There's never been an Eagles receiver that had a 1,000-yard season under Doug Peterson. Zach Ertz did. But a wide receiver never did. And, you know, by the end, you know, it was like Greg Ward, Travis Fulgham, kind of like, what is really going on here? I feel like there's maybe a conspiracy or something, because I'm not sure how the team's receiver core could be this bizarre. But so, yeah, Doug Peterson doesn't have much of a track record of producing receiver.
In evaluating receivers, yeah.
But we have a comment in our chat, by the way, that Zay Jones' single career 100-yard game was week 17. Last season. I believe Zay Jones is 35 too. So I think he actually is like 28 or 29. Let me look this up. Yeah, he's 26. Now he's about to turn 27. But yeah, curious signing by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you know what's not curious is the timing of this break. We'll be right back.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack. and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The 2022 NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide is available now, and we are giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off our draft guide and an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use the promo code BASES22. We get you ready for your fantasy draft with expert insight and tools at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus and use promo code BASES22 at checkout to save big this season. Danny, had you heard there was a baseball season happening?
I did. The bases are big now. And
next year.
Oh, next year. Well, yeah. Now I'm not going to watch.
You're not going to watch. That was the one reason you're going to watch.
I was going to watch because you know why? Because
I've always
been interested in how every throw to first is a bang bang play, and now the runners will always be safe.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. Yeah, that is weird. They are always very close. They're trying to push. So, like the stolen base, you know, used to be a huge part of the game. Now the analytics have ruined the stolen base, just like everything else.
Why is that?
Because like if you get caught stealing, basically like you have to be like almost 80% successful on your steals for it to be analytically viable.
Really?
Like if you get caught even 30% of the time, like that out is like so bad that it's not worth the gain of the steal. So like the stolen base has been canceled.
Oh, that stinks.
I know, it really stinks. So they're trying to uncancel the stolen base.
I mean, Ricky Henderson is probably the most exciting player I ever watched because his ability to steal at any moment.
Yeah, no, it actually is a valuable goal to try to get the running game going again in baseball.
Yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
Not only the league leader has like 33 steals now. Ricky Henderson used to like do that in a doubleheader.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, it's they're down bad. Running's down bad. The MLB. Down bad. Amon-Ra St. Brown? Question mark. Denny. DJ Shark has signed with the Lions. What does this mean? Is this good for Amon-Ra? Because it signals they're going to let him eat in like the target dominator role. Tell us about DJ Shark with Jared Goff.
Yeah, I've had some exchanges with Detroit Lions fans on Twitter throughout the day after I called it a horrific fit, DJ Shark in Detroit. I didn't say it was a bad deal. Like it's clearly a fine deal for the Lions to give Chark a 1 year prove it contract a year after he suffered a horrific, ankle injury. And
forgot about that.
Yeah. He's still rehabbing. Yikes. He was on Thursday Night Football. You remember? I mean, it was bad.
Right. Well, I think that was the game. That was the Urban Meyer. I'm going to stay in Ohio game. Anytime you can stay in Ohio, you have to do it, by the way.
I think we can blame DJ Shark's injury on Urban Meyer getting fired. I think that's you know, because he wouldn't have stayed. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But, I think it could be good in that for St. Brown in that Shark could clear out some space underneath as a deep threat. In 2019, Shark went for 1,000 yards and I think 8 touchdowns with Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville. And he proved to be, a viable deep ball pass catcher. The Lions really didn't have that. They had Josh Reynolds a little bit, but I think Shark is probably better than Reynolds.
You would hope.
So for St. Brown, I don't think it changes much. I think that what changes for St. Brown is, possibly a DeAndre Swift, a full season, full healthy season. You saw St. Brown. So I did some game splits here. And like you do, and St. Brown averaged 6.5 targets per game with DeAndre Swift in the lineup last year. He averaged 11.5 without him.
Wow.
TJ Hockenson is also a short area target guy. I don't think anybody's going into the season thinking, I'm penciling in Amon-Ra St. Brown for 30% target share in the Lions. Like that, that's not going to happen. He may be, his ADP may reflect that belief though. You know,
he's going to have a fascinating ADP where I feel like the fantasy drafting public has gotten so shrewd that they frequently now like overfade like fast finishes. It's like no one wants to be the sucker. No one wants to be like the point chaser. And I just feel like that sometimes we like discount stuff like too much.
Sure. Sure. At this point. So I just wanted to spell this out why I call it a bad fit for Chark, and because I have a platform and Lions fans don't. So I'm going to tell you that 9% of golf's attempts last year went more than 20 yards. That's the sixth lowest rate in the league among starters. No starting quarter.
I thought you were going to say the sixth lowest rate all time. That seems shockingly low.
It is. It is very low. No starting quarterback had a lower air yards per attempt than Goff last year. If you want to cherry pick his final five games, fine. We can do that. Look, I'm a fantasy analyst. I'm used to cherry picking. Okay. and Lions fans were cherry picking me to death on Twitter today. That's fine. Let's do it. Okay. If you want to cherry pick final five games, nobody knows
more about cherry picking than me.
We love picking the cherries, eating the cherries. Goff's air yards attempts was the sixth lowest in those last five games. Okay. You go back to 2020 with the Rams. Goff was 23rd in adjusted yards per attempt, just ahead of Nick Mullins and Andy Dalton. So, also his peripheral stuff didn't change that much when Dan Campbell took over the play calling from Anthony Lynn. That was another thing I was told. Everything changed when Dan Campbell took over. And yes, the Lions' offense was more aggressive through the air and better overall, more productive, more aggressive on fourth downs when he took over. And that's great. That's great. But Goff wasn't that much better. He is who he is. And so Chark is not going to be used all that much. I don't think he's going to get that many targets downfield. He could have his moments. And I'm sure now that I've spoken out against this signing, I'm sure that I will.
Going to go nuts now.
I'll hear about it. Okay. When Chark catches his lone target in week one for a 68 yard touchdown, I'm going to hear about it. I'm going to hear. I get that. And I'm ready for it. But overall, they would really have to change the way they operate on offense for Chark to make sense as a fit. And I feel bad for DJ Chark.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a terrible career move. And I think he's a ton of potential. I know that he's coming back from the ankle, but I feel like going to a better team with a quarterback who could actually mesh with what he does best would have been a far better career move. Maybe he didn't have a market though.
He must not have had a market. And now he's on like the Breshad Perriman career path. Yeah. He was, I believe, also on the Lions last year.
He was.
So yeah, horrible. This DJ Chark is like not a thing now in fantasy. Everything you said about the Lions offense is true. It was weird how Jared Goff became much more effective downfield, relatively speaking, when Josh Reynolds arrived off waivers. Like that did coincide with Dan Campbell taking over the offense. So like you said, nothing actually really changed other than he occasionally completed passes down. Cause like they kind of almost literally didn't have a deep threat before Josh Reynolds arrived.
Yeah.
Or it was like embarrassingly bad personnel down the field. And DJ Chark should be an upgrade on Josh Reynolds. But I agree with everything you said where DJ Chark's not bad. Like I don't think it really affects Amon-Ra St. Brown at all.
No.
Like, used totally differently. The bigger concern is, TJ Hockenson, who's healthy last year? DeAndre Swift staying healthy.
I mean, DeAndre Swift averaged under 6 yards per target, as you would expect from running back. Those are a lot of the short area targets that St. Brown was gobbling up in the last, 4 to 6 weeks of the season.
Amon-Ra St. Brown, by the way, he was third in the NFL in yards over the final 5 weeks of the season.
Right. Led in targets, led in target share.
Yeah. I mean, he's good. He's like a good player.
Yes, he is, for sure.
He will have a fascinating ADP because I feel like the week of the fading could like very quickly go too far with him. But who the heck knows? We don't know. We're not paid.
Well, I have no idea.
You want me to know? I don't know. J.D. McKissic has signed with the Buffalo Bills, Denny. This is a weird one because I was kind of hoping Devin Singletary would finally have some runway to like have a backfield to himself because I thought the Bills, it seemed like had a team ever benefited more from like cutting down their committee and just like focusing on a back and letting like one guy like keep his head in the game and just be like, is this good? I feel like it's just better when you can have like a primary back. Your primary back is the same for every situation.
Right.
So like it's not the most important plays of the game. like a 2-minute drill and you're taking your best back off the field. I thought maybe the Bills would try to stick with that approach, but you can't just have one back. Now they have J.D. McKissic, one of the best pass catching backs in the NFL. Does this end like any shot Devin Singletary had of being an RB2? And just, if that's not what you're going to lead with, like, what are just your general thoughts on J.D. McKissic landing with the Bills?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge hit to Singletary's, you know, pass game usage. I will say that, you know, like many mobile quarterbacks, Josh Allen doesn't target running backs and never has and probably never will until he's an old man in the Buffalo offense. He targeted running backs on about 15.5% of his attempts last year. That was the third lowest rate in the league. But Singletary's pass game involvement really grew after he seized that every down role from, you know, when Zach Moss just became basically like a special teamer. Singletary, you know, I'm looking at his late season game logs, 7 targets, 6 targets, 4, 5, 5, you know, this is stuff that really wasn't happening early in the season for him, to go along with, of course, almost all of the carries in the pass heavy Bills offense. So I think, you know, Singletary becomes way, way less appealing as an upside option. You know, conversely, Antonio Gibson becomes interesting.
I was going to ask, so is it like green light Gibby now, basically? Because talk about another guy who late in the season, even though he's dealing with a debilitating shin injury where it kind of seemed like they were almost just going to shut Antonio Gibson down. Instead, they went like full green light with him and just heaping touches on his plate late in the season. Yeah, right. I mean, is he back in like RB1ville?
For now. The you know, Washington has always talked up Gibson as, you know, we see him as McCaffrey. We see him as this, you know, as an every down guy who can catch a lot of passes. He was a receiver in college, for the love of God, but it's never happened. So let's wait a little bit to see what Washington does in free agency and maybe after in the draft. If they get a pass catching specialist, I think that we could see the same kind of usage for Gibson in 2022. But we did have a glimmer of hope for Antonio Gibson at the end of last season when McKissic was out with a head injury. Before McKissic's injury, Antonio Gibson was averaging around 14 pass routes per game and 2.5 targets per game. Not great. Washington targeted running backs on 23% of their pass attempts. That was the fourth highest in the league. So when McKissic went down, we saw Gibson's usage changed to this 24 routes per game and 5 targets. Big change. Okay. Double the targets, almost double the pass routes, double your fun is what I'm saying.
So I take it as a vote of confidence because this is like a contract the Commanders could have afforded. I mean, I think somehow they were like, don't have a great cap situation, which makes no sense, but I mean, they could have brought back J.D. McKissic if they really wanted to. I mean, they could have a plan B up their sleeve. I mean, it's going to be, if you add a pass catching back, it's going to be like a day 3 pick. So it's not going to be someone that's going to like be immediately. Right? I mean, I guess they could sign someone in the second wave of free agency. But I do take it as a vote of confidence that even if maybe it's not plan A, like if the way things work out, they don't add a true pass catching complement, they're confident in Antonio Gibson's ability to handle that role. So you can be very happy about it, basically, if you're an Antonio Gibson partisan.
Sure. I think so. And I do, some part of me has a hard time believing that they're just going to roll with him as an every down guy with nobody, you know, kind of dipping into his pass game usage. But
it just doesn't happen, really. Like, if it doesn't happen for you as a rookie, it like just basically doesn't happen. Because they're a guy like Joe Mixon's another guy where he's basically there now. Like, he had that profile like more than anyone coming out of Oklahoma, and they still like never fully went all the way with Joe Mixon as a 3-down back. So they're almost there now, but they're still not quite there. And I just feel like if a team doesn't trust you to handle 3 downs as a rookie, like it's like a force field comes up and they're just like, well, you can never handle all 3 downs. There's nothing we can do about it.
Right. What do you want us to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's like Najee Harris now the rest of his life will just like never get to take a snap off. Because he got it as a rookie.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to ask just 2 random questions. Antonio Gibson or Cam Akers?
Oh, man. That's tough. I think Gibson.
I'm gonna lean Cam still.
Cam Akers, totally arbitrary. His performance is it was frightening in the postseason.
Yeah, well, but I think the explosion's gonna come back, Dennis. I really do. Let me ask you a few arbitrary Devin Singletary ones.
Okay.
Devin Singletary or Miles Sanders?
Oh,
God. I'm sorry.
So gross. A Singletary, I guess.
Devin Singletary or friend of the show, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Oh, man. My man, Clyde. Wow. Clyde.
And this one, I guess, maybe is kind of easy. Devin Singletary or James Conner?
Oh, Conner.
Okay. Yeah.
Miles.
I figured.
All right. Connor's the RB1 overall. I'm not too excited, though.
They're going to add another back, I think. Probably.
Doesn't matter.
He's Eno Benjamin season.
Oh, stop with the Eno. Stop. Everybody stop with Eno Benjamin. It's not happening. The team doesn't even know he's on the roster.
Eno Benjamin season, folks. Yeah, no, they don't. he's probably going to get cut or something. The last prepared prompt I have here, said Wilson season, ? I feel like this is a very Mike Kyle Shanahan type signing where like I feel like you're not part of the Kyle Shanahan system if you don't have like weirdly targeted receiver or running back signings. Like I don't know why a team would come out like hyper aggressively on day one of free agency and sign Cedric Wilson, even though he was really good down the stretch last year. Do you see any fantasy intrigue with Cedric Wilson in the receiver core that still has Jalen Waddle and still has Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki?
All I'm saying about Cedric Wilson is that he was pretty productive every time he got a chance to start in the Cowboys offense. Now, that is the Cowboys offense. That is Dak Prescott. This is Tua, and it's the Miami offense. So it's a slightly different, I would say, as far as the passing game goes. But, you know, I mean, you look at last year. He got a start on Thanksgiving Day against the Raiders, 10 targets, 7 catches for 104 yards. You know, that's about it. No, I'm kidding. Later on against Philadelphia, he operated as a starter at the last game of the season where the Cowboys scored 51 points. He caught 5 balls for 119 yards and 2 touchdowns. You know, so he was
good.
He's done his thing when he's out there as a full-time starter. Behind Jalen Waddle, I think that he could pretty easily emerge as the wide receiver too. How valuable that will be in the Miami offense is kind of up for debate, I guess.
I have a totally arbitrary question again, and some of the listeners might not really have a point of reference for this, but say it's a dynasty league, it's a 5-round rookie draft. Would you trade a 3rd-round rookie pick for Cedric Wilson in like your full-on dynasty league?
I would.
I think I would too, because a lot of times those 3rd-rounders, like you're just lighting them on fire. And said Wilson, it could amount to nothing. Like anytime you have a guy who like flashed late in the season, he was a targeted signing for someone we're assuming is a really good offensive mind. I feel like you just have to assume some level of intrigue there, even if there's barriers between it. Like you said, I mean, Jalen Waddle could be like an all-pro type guy almost. He's got a very, very high ceiling. But it's like with Sed's profile, his finish last season, like the fact that like an offensive mind went hard after him. I think it's like worth a risk. I mean, it could by August you're like, well, I really wish I had that 3rd-round pick back. But I think
you're probably not going to have that 3rd-round pick on your roster by the beginning of the following season. So.
Yeah, the following season. You'll have him in this season.
I think that's kind of an easy call. And you're right. I mean, the Dolphins were pretty aggressive with Cedric Wilson. I mean, the Cowboys wanted to bring him back.
They did. The Cowboys really liked Cedric Wilson initially.
Yes. After losing Amari Cooper, I was kind of low-key a little bit excited. Like, oh, Cedric Wilson's going to be a starter for Dallas too. Next year. Not happening.
So final question. When we were talking about Russell Gage, I mean, what are the Falcons receiver core? I think the number one receiver is Olamide Zaccheaus. Is he still on the team? I mean,
well, he was tendered today originally.
Okay, good. There you good. Go. Still on the team.
Still on the team.
Anything there?
Down bad.
You got anything on the Falcons receiver core? I looked up Falcons ESPN roster. Just Googling it real quick.
Look, if you're Deshaun Watson, what's stopping you from going to Atlanta except for everything?
Very good point. I mean, Christian Blake. Oh, man, Chad Hansen's on the roster. Wow, former Texans great.
Chad Hansen.
Man, Tajae Sharpe, I don't know if he's actually still on the team.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a bad, this is a tough scene here.
It's honestly a horrible roster outside of Kyle Pitts.
Like, no, it's a god awful roster. It's shocking they won 7 games last year. I did my write up recently on Arthur Smith for my upcoming coaches article, and like, this is a classic. It's going to get worse before it gets better. Uh-huh. There's not even any like 2 or 3 level fixes here. This is like a 5 level fix, basically.
Yeah.
Like a minimum 2 to 3 year turnover. Cause like, this is a nightmare situation, this roster.
Yeah. I honestly think that it's a complete smokescreen, the Falcons having a chance to land Watson, because it maybe to drive up the price for their division rival Panthers or whatever. And Saints, I guess, but I can't imagine a less appealing landing spot than Atlanta.
Well, too, and like, this is not a franchise that can trade 3 first round picks. Like, they have holes at every important position group, and even if they got Deshaun Watson, I mean, it'd just be like fallout wreckage, basically. Like, all these problems, no draft capital, capital to fix it. And yeah, it doesn't work.
Here's a question. So a lot of reporting has said that the Texans would want a quarterback, a day one starting quarterback in exchange for Watson. So like, if he were to go to Cleveland, it would be Mayfield back to Houston, right?
Yeah.
If he were to go to Atlanta, presumably Matt Ryan to Houston. Would Matt Ryan sooner retire than?
Well, I was wondering about this. Well, the Texans operate so bizarrely, but I think it could be like kind of like an NBA or MLB style trade almost, where they would like buy him out or cut him or whatever.
Right.
Cause the cap space doesn't really matter to them. They do like Davis Mills, and it's weird though, cause like you said, they do like want a starter supposedly, but I think with, there would almost be like a mercy release with Matt Ryan.
Right.
And
we're not going to make you do this at 37 years old. You can go spend your last couple years with the Colts.
See what happens. If this did happen, I couldn't see Matt Ryan starting a game for the Texans. And I don't think he'd retire. I think they would come to an accommodation and he would be released.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Who the heck knows? Who the heck knows when the show is going to end right now? Show's over. We're done.
That's professional
podcast. We're done. Yeah, we are done, but we'll be back. You're listening to this Wednesday morning. We'll be back Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern, live on YouTube and Twitch with myself, Denny, Patrick Crane, and Kyle Dvorchik, breaking down the further developments of free agency. Free agency is kind of already dead, but even though it hasn't started yet.
Right. Technically, we like our tampering, but it has to be legal.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, there should be a boatload more signings by Wednesday evening. We'll probably go back over some of the territory we covered today. We've got some smart folks joining us tomorrow night. So thank you so much for listening today. Please listen Wednesday evening. Please stay locked on NBCSportsEdge.com as we follow every transaction during this insane free agency week. For Denny Carter, I am Patrick Daugherty. St. Patrick's Day is in 2 days. We'll catch you guys later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium-iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.